It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so Thursday afternoon, like yesterday, today's Thursday, Wednesday afternoon, about 2-ish or so, between like 2 and 4, I go from feeling just fine to like horribly sick.
Oh.
Like, I can feel it, like just that sort of headache in the back, and I'm queasy and feverish, and it's awful. And so I'm like, shit. And I had to cancel some plans I had. And I come home, just go to bed immediately. I just feel awful. Now, as I think we've discussed, I have zero time off. So if I'm sick, I am in trouble. But I'm like, I'll bring home my laptop. If I'm sick, I'll work from home. And my boss is on a trip right now, so it's not like she can tell me no. So, I bring it home. Whatever. Wake up in the morning. Actually, like, that night, I suddenly was like, you know, a lot of these symptoms are kind of familiar. And the big one is, in the last 2 hours, I've gone to the bathroom like 5 times. Like, maybe this is a blood sugar thing.
Mm.
So I got up and I had some slow carb-related stuff and some protein stuff and felt pretty okay. Went to bed, woke up in the morning, great. Not sick at all. Wonderful. I can go to work, which is really good because I had shit I had to do, and I was kind of getting coverage, but whatever. But here's the thing. I take home my laptop so seldom for work that it is not uncommon for me to forget it. I did not this morning, though. Got it, took it in the car, went to work, set the case down, pulled it out. It was heavier than I remembered because they switched to these smaller ones that are lighter, and it was kind of beat up, and I was surprised. And then it slowly dawned on me it was my home laptop. So I did spend like a half hour trying to make it work, because technically if I connect from home I can do stuff, but there's something about being on the campus and using their guest Wi-Fi that it just would not let me log in. And finally I was like, screw it, I gotta go home and switch them out. So that was my morning. Except this morning I also learned 3 interesting things.
Okay.
1, Christian Bale's British.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Oh.
Never knew that. 2, Unikitty from the Lego movie apparently is getting her own cartoon series. Not like computer anime or anything, like cartoon. That's weird. 3, Christian Bale's fucking Welsh.
Mm.
In fact, he was born in the town that was the first night and last night of my trip when I went out to Wales and hiked Haverford West.
Oh.
Yeah, that was shocking. A lot of the great British actors are Welsh. Michael Sheen, Anthony Hopkins. They're just talking about somebody else today. I can't remember who. There's another one.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, like with Anthony Hopkins, for the most part, these are guys that have been taught received pronunciation, so now they just talk like they're on the BBC. I mean, technically, Patrick Stewart's from Yorkshire.
Mm.
But, like, he can't even do the accent anymore, if he tries.
Really?
The only way he can do it is there's a poem his aunt used to recite, and he can essentially do an impression of her doing that has the accent. but otherwise, yeah, he can't even, like, fake a Yorkshire anymore.
Hmm.
And that's where he's from.
Hmm.
BBC English was a very big thing back in the day. Sorry, I've been watching all these big fat quiz shows on YouTube from Britain, so I'm picking up a lot of weird shit right now.
Well, I mean, you know, I grew up sounding a lot like I sound on the podcast here, surrounded by people we were close enough to Missouri that most of the people I grew up with sounded, I mean, you wouldn't be able to tell they weren't from Missouri.
Yeah, yeah.
But why do I sound like that? Because I watched Tom Brokaw.
Yeah.
And I basically, I don't know why, I just talked like him instead of my parents and the people around me.
Did I tell you about Sandy Toksvig? Toksvig, I think. She's a comedian in Britain. She's actually, the reason she's interesting, the reason people might know her right now is the Great British Bake Off, you know, switched networks and like almost everybody left the show. She's one of the new hosts on that. But anyway, I just know her from panel shows.
Okay.
And here's what I know about her. She's apparently like has dual citizenship in the UK and somewhere in Scandinavia, like Norway or something like that.
Okay.
She is a lesbian. She's married. And yeah, she's a comedian. She's written some books and stuff too. But I really like her. She's fun. And I actually recently learned she's the new host of QI. Stephen Fry left as host, and she's the host, and she does a pretty good job. Listening to something on her the other day comes up. She was born in New York and lived there till she was like 14.
Mm.
And then was sent to a boarding school in England,
mm-hmm.
and was made fun of for her accent. And so while watching some old movies, basically took the accent from those old movies. But it's not like she's bi-dialectical. She's like, literally the accent you hear me using, it's fake. I affect it all the time.
Oh.
Like her whole life, she just, I mean, obviously now it's probably second nature to her, but she's like, yeah, this is a fake accent that I invented watching these old movies.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, I found that. I always find, you know, multi-dialectical stuff to be fascinating. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the British Hour. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that's been going on for more than 6 years now and is actually a prank call show, and we have just forgotten to call anyone.
We just forget.
Yeah, like, we should... we're probably the least successful prank call show out there on account of not making a single prank phone call.
Not so far, anyway.
So, yeah. I'm Tony. I use a fake name, obviously, if we ever call someone.
And I'm William, and this is episode 347.
Is it 346 for the last one?
Mm-hmm.
So how far are you in the book?
I haven't started yet.
Why? Halloween's over now. You have no more excuse. Go!
As I said, my wife took several days off. Now, she did work today.
You said a couple days. Exactly. Today, she's back at work. You should have been doing it.
No, because I want to make sure... I suspect it's going to take me possibly 3 days to read it very carefully and to, to make very... hopefully very helpful suggestions.
So you're planning a one and done.
That's right.
All right.
I don't...
Because see, in my head, I would be like, I read it once just to read it like I'm a person.
No, if I started it today, there's a good chance my work would have been interrupted by the weekend, and then on Monday, I wouldn't even have remembered where I was. So
you're going to start Monday.
I'm going to start Monday and dedicate the whole week to it if I have to.
Nice. Right now, Jasmine is my favorite Disney princess. Because not only, I don't know what he's messing with over there. Addie's trying to bury something in the corner, so there's probably something gross over there. Do you like how our house smells lemony fresh? Did mm-hmm. you notice that when you came in?
Sure.
I don't know what the hell happened. Basically, at some point, we must have spilled like dishwashing liquid down a vent somewhere or something, because ever since we turned on the heat, like it smells like this, but I'm like, yeah, you know, it could smell of worse things. Addie! Knock it off! Eddie!
Weird behavior. So...
It's a very cat-like thing. So he probably pooped over there because he's an asshole.
Jazz is...
Jazz is my favorite because not only did she start reading it, which, like, almost no one has done that I know of. Like, some people, in fact, specifically are waiting for a time near the end of November, and I'm like, screw you, I would have put you in the next group if I'd known. Because here's the thing. I gave everybody through November. I just am so desperate to, like, hear...
I know.
Somebody.
And I'm desperate to read it, but I want to do it right.
And not only has Jazz started it, she sent me the first few chapters of Critique already.
Oh, wow.
So I could... She properly gauged how insanely, like, desperate I was. And so she's like, I'm just going to send you what I already wrote. And that was weird as hell. I read it today. It was weird as hell.
Why was it weird?
Because it's the first real criticism I've had of any sort of my book, and I never knew how I would react, and it's very odd. For some reason, I don't understand, because 4 chapters is what she did, and that's not that much in this book. There are 50 chapters in this book.
Oh, wow.
So it's not that much. But I feel like I expected more comments. But I'm like, but I don't think that's real, because I mean, there's not like a page goes by without at least one or two. But I expect more, like, and there's way more good stuff, to the degree that, like, my brain is like, she's just condescending to me. Like, good job. But I'm like, this woman teaches classes on books like this, so.
No, I'm pretty sure she would.
I'm like, no, exactly. Like, there are other people who I will continue to suspect. Her, I had to be like, no.
Nope. Well, for one thing, she'll take you at your word. If you say that's what you want, it's brutal honesty, that's what she'll give you.
And so far, everything's either good or are real, either like copy edit things or stylistic choice. Like, basically, it's all either, all the bad stuff so far is copy editing things, including some of them just typos. It won't happen next week. You got that to look forward to.
Trash food here.
Hi there. Yeah, every comment was either positive, or it was like a copy edit thing, or several of them, I would say, yeah, stylistically, she'd be like, I think this sentence works better this way. And sometimes it was for these stylistic reasons, and other times she was just like, I just think it sounds better this way. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And, like, it's weird to me. Like, I have to keep reminding myself that she read the first four chapters. It's really hard to say broader things about the story, because I feel like there's going to be a fundamental shift in the whole structure of the story by the time I rewrite it again. Because of things in my own head. Mm. But she did address story stuff. It's just very weird to finally have somebody, like, commenting, and there's that little bit like the probability wave has collapsed enough that I'm like, apparently it's not absolute shit. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that I really thought that, but like I said, like, it was just, it was completely unknowable how people were going to react,
because you hadn't looked in the box yet.
Exactly. Yeah. Schrodinger's manuscript. And so I'm like, apparently, like, it's at least to the point that we can verify it's not absolute crap. Unless Jasmine hit herself on the head, or is lying, or any of those, but I don't think she is.
No,
so
I'm not. I'm not. Don't expect me to send you like, oh, I've gotten through half of it. Here's some stuff, because
no, that's fine.
For me personally, there's always going to be questions that I have early in the story that might be answered later on.
Please,
so why would I?
Please follow up on that shit, because I've had continuity things. There are several things that there's at least three or four things in there that straight up are never explained or even like addressed as unknowns that I plan for them to be revealed in sequels. And it's occurred to me, like, some of these I'm like, yeah, that's just like, we don't even pause at the end, you know, because there's other stories that are like, and we still don't know why, blah blah blah, like. There's at least three or four things that I'm like, no, it just happened, and I never talked about it again. And I'm like, that's not right. And, I mean, there have been tons of continuity stuff. So, no, everything I've been saying with giving people shit for not reading on time and stuff like that is just me whining. Like, I want you to do what I wrote that you should do. I want you to take November, whatever. And I want you to do it however you want to do it, because you guys are doing me a huge favor here. I just want you to magically happen to want to do it in a way that gives me feedback immediately right now, because I'm going to.
Well, it's been really difficult for me to have it and not read it, but what helps me be disciplined about it is I'm really committed to doing the best work for you that I can, and to me that means, you know, an uninterrupted work. Like I said, probably 3 days.
Reading's weird for you, so I mean,
I read very slowly.
Your craft,
and I want to comment on, you know, because, you know, one thing that I've been frustrated by sometimes with feedback from things that I've written is a person will point out all the things they didn't understand or had a problem with, but I have no idea what worked. So when I go to fix the things that were problematic, I don't know what to change. Because I don't want to break something that worked
Which is why I've made it a big point, and this has always been a thing in my life anyway. I believe positive feedback in all things is equally as important as negative,
sure,
if not more so. So that I made a point when I sent you guys a thing. I'm like, tell me the good stuff too, because I don't want to accidentally edit the good stuff out of existence.
But that's something that people don't understand is the practical aspect of it.
But it's a balance, because people sort of want to lean either way. But be completely honest with the bad stuff.
But it's not just about that thing where when you give someone bad news, you should give them a little good news.
There's
an actual practical dimension here, because whatever I need to fix, fine. But I don't want to break something else and fixing
it.
So you need to tell me.
Or lose something that you personally thought was the coolest thing in the book.
What did you like? You know.
And yeah, it doesn't mean your criticism should be 50% good and 50% bad.
No, it doesn't mean that at all.
It means good is as important as bad, but that gives no sense. That it should be as high a priority.
Right.
That doesn't, like, maybe the book's 80% bad. Maybe it's the other way.
But that makes it even more important that you don't screw up that 20% that you got right. So, but yes, it oftentimes people will say, well, I don't understand this. And they'll just take for granted the parts that they like.
Yeah.
Like, the funny thing is, I think people think that if you've written this and you're giving it to them, you already know that it's good, or you already know what parts work. But I think they assume you do, and therefore the only thing you don't know is what's wrong with it, or else you wouldn't have submitted it that way.
Well, and in general, people think of critique as the bad stuff.
I suppose, but you really need to... The fact of the matter is, when a person creates something, anybody, I don't care who they are, they don't really know for sure, except for their own taste, what's working, what's not working, and you need to tell them both.
Yeah.
And again, not so much for any emotional issue, although that's important too, but for practical issues of when they go back to rewrite it, what should they not touch, or what should they do more of?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of that.
And this is true all in life.
Yeah, that's right. It's for everything that you're taking somebody on.
I do like there was one or two. There's you probably unsurprised, a fair number of jokes in this book.
Mm-hmm.
One or two, like, Jazz specifically called out that she got them, and I was like, I'm glad. Because there are some that I'm sure have to go. As my wife, who has now read the first chapter, before she read the first chapter, she says to me at lunch, she says, I've read the first paragraph of your book, I already have several notes. And I was like, I get that, because I have several notes about my own first paragraph. I have this thing about first lines. Like, books, like, stories and books and RPG campaigns come out of first lines for me a lot. This book came out of the first line, and I really love them. And later, when I'm like, they're not good, and frequently they don't work. This one, I think the first line is gonna end up going in this one. But we'll have to see. Guys did not comment on it, so. And the one that I've already had in place for Beck and James Lowenstein, Queen of the Spacefires, !! I already have, like, part of that also came out of a first line, and I'm like, I haven't written a word, and I'm already like, that might have to go. That might be a darling I have to kill. My first paragraph, I'm not surprised she had issues, but...
Well, I'm really looking forward to it.
Trish is having a hard time because she sees too much of me in it, so a lot of it she has to remind herself it's not me in the story. I think that probably gets easier as it goes on, because honestly I am in this story, but I'm split between a few characters, and I feel like once those characters show up, then it's a little easier. But we'll see. It's exciting.
I mean, hopefully by the next time we get together, you'll already have all of my feedback, and you'll know exactly what I think of it.
You don't want to do like we used to do and sit down and go over it.
Oh, we can do that if you like.
All right. Okay.
But I don't know if we'll be able to do that before the podcast.
No. That's what I was saying. I'm saying if we're doing that, then we probably won't have that done before
would
the
you,
podcast.
Oh, so let me see if make sure I understand. Would you rather us go over it before you see my feedback then? Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily. Okay. You remember you and I would get together we would go through it. I can't remember if you had it before that or not.
I don't remember that either.
Yeah. I don't think it really matters.
Okay.
Especially with the number of editors I have, I'm going to be looking at everybody's feedback
repeatedly. Yeah, I'll probably send you the file as soon as I'm done with it. But if you ever want to get together and talk about it, we can do that for sure.
For you, I told people I don't require it, and also people who are far away, I can do it if you want to do Skype or whatever. You and I... have experience doing that.
Yes.
And we know that it, I mean, it worked pretty well for you, I thought.
Yes, it did.
And I felt there was a lot of stuff that you got when I told you that you wouldn't necessarily have gotten
Agreed.
From what I wrote down.
I agree. So I agree with that, yeah.
I like that. But, again, everybody who may or may not be editing my book out there, there's several of you that listen. You do you. I want to facilitate you editing the best way you think you can. And I just appreciate any feedback. How was your week?
It was good. I mean, you know, Halloween and everything, that was great, as usual.
I got my new tablet.
Oh, you got a new tablet.
Yes. It's finally like a real, like, grown-up, not like a Kindle thing. Like, it's a it's a Samsung Galaxy Tab S3.
Mm.
It talks to my phone, so, like, immediately it was like, oh, is this the same thing as the phone? So, yes, do you want all your apps over here? I was like, sure. So, I'm basically at the point where I hardly use my laptop anymore. I just use this tablet. It's pretty cool.
That's nice.
That's fun. See any movies? Are you going to see Thor this weekend?
Probably not.
We are probably going to wait until Thanksgiving, because then the whole family's going to go. It's hard.
I haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming yet either.
I am very excited for this Thor, and I'm very scared about that. Because I got excited for each of the first two, and they were not very good.
Yeah, they weren't.
This looks like it's going to be really good.
Though. Horrible.
They're some of my least favorites in the MCU, I would say.
Well, I agree. But, I mean, they still did better than some of the DC
that's,
movies.
That's true. I still am glad I saw them instead of the ones I opted not to
right,
see.
Right.
I'll have to see, like, your take on Justice League. Because I still don't know that I'm going to go see it. But we'll have to see. I did see a movie I need to talk about just a bit. AV Club was doing a thing on Hong Kong horror, which I have dabbled in barely. And Hong Kong films, mostly, you know, they were like action films. The Shaw brothers made a bunch of martial arts films and things like that.
Sure.
But there was a different group that were horror films that were sort of this weird mix between a Western horror film and the East and South Asian horror that we all know, like Japanese horror and stuff like
sure.
that. All done on, you know, shoestring budgets with really terrible dubbing of English and stuff like that, and just absolutely nuts. And they specifically brought up Black Magic from 1975, which apparently was the Shaw Brothers' attempt at cashing in on the popularity of The Exorcist, which had just come out. And made, apparently, for horror movie standards, all the money in the world. So this was their attempt at that. If you saw it, you would... I mean, if I didn't tell you that information, you would have no idea. Like, there's no resemblance. I'm not sure anybody technically gets possessed. Definitely nobody's, like, exorcising anyone. Although our hero does start off as a construction worker, and then he gets hypnotized into being a boy toy, and then he gets brought back to normal and then rehypnotized them for a little while. I think he's a zombie sort of for no reason, and then later rehypnotized, and then at the end he wins. And apparently he's a fairly well-known martial artist who acted in a lot of these action films. There is no martial arts in this movie. It is nuts. And it's dubbed over in English, and it's that thing where they didn't necessarily get good voice actors, and like they have weird regional accents. So like one of the guys has this like New York accent, which is just very odd. from this witch doctor character, you know? Also, at one point, the captions are horrible, best illustrated by one point when a guy who is talking to an older gentleman he does not know and refers to him as Mr., and the captions say Leslie.
Hmm.
By the way, guy's name was not Leslie. So, we do learn the guy's name, and it was not Leslie. Weird as hell, 70s as hell, really fucked up. There's some... honestly, impressive practical horror effects. And also some really unimpressive practical horror effects. And some terrible non-practical horror effects. Yeah, weird as fuck. If you guys are into that kind of shit, it's on Amazon. And it was pretty hilarious. It made a sequel, which I'm totally going to watch this weekend.
Have you ever seen Bride of Frankenstein, the original Bride of Frankenstein?
I have not. I have seen The Bride, starring Sting.
Oh. So, you know, we've got that collection at home.
Yes.
So we finished watching them, and I still think The Wolfman's a good movie, and I still think The Mummy's a pretty good movie, too. Most of the rest of them, Dracula's okay. But Bride of Frankenstein was surprisingly good. I really liked it quite a bit.
Like, purposefully good?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because you laughed.
Well, because what makes it good is some... it's hard to really describe. Like I said, I was talking last time about James Whale. I couldn't remember his first name last time, but James Whale.
I call him Jim.
There are things, when I see his movies, there are things that are signature James Whale things that I don't really like. But
like the plume when the blowhole comes above the water?
But in this case, the...
this is a signature whale thing.
In this case, I think some of it was very much him, and yet it worked for me for some reason. Mostly because of the actor who played... oh my gosh, now I can't remember. Dr.
Frankenstein?
Pretorius? I think. Is his name. So,
why is it not Frankenstein?
No, Frankenstein's in it, but this guy, he comes and he's Frankenstein, Henry Frankenstein's a mentor. And he wants to, he has been creating, like in the book, he's been creating life without using cadavers. He's just creating life.
Yeah. It's a squirrel.
But,
you're welcome.
But ironically, in
it's a turtle.
In the book, when Victor Frankenstein creates life from scratch, he has to make it huge in proportion because he's making all the parts separately. And so, all the smaller parts, it helps him if the thing is big. The creature's so big. But for whatever reason, they reverse that in the film, and all his creatures are really tiny. Huh. And they do some interesting effects to make that. That's actually probably the least interesting and worst James Whale part of the film. But the guy who plays that doctor is so good. I mean, he's the guy that you've probably seen in clips where he proposes a toast. Here's to the era, new age of gods and monsters or whatever.
Okay.
And so anyway, he gets together with Henry because he thinks that maybe combined he can achieve what he wants. And so what the Bride of Frankenstein is some of Henry's cadaver type stuff, but the brain is made from scratch. He
Oh, of course.
Yeah, he made the brain
like
from scratch.
You do.
And
with
I don't know.
What shall I make it, dear Henry?
It was pretty interesting. It's a pretty good film, really.
Shall I make it, dear Henry?
And it's far better than its predecessor. Far better.
With neural pathways, Dr. Pretorius.
I think it's Pretorius. I think Septimus Pretorius or something like that.
Jesus. So
I might be pronouncing it wrong.
He's like 1,200 years old.
Oh, but the guy who plays this probably part is so good. It's so fun to watch.
Because he's a vampire who's been around since Roman times.
Well, and also in this one, Boris Karloff playing the creature talks.
Ooh.
Oh! And this is the one...
That's the way that Frankenstein's monster is going to pick up lines.
This is the one...
Baby.
This is the film where he...
Buy you drink or have to sleep with you first.
This is the film where he meets the blind hermit.
Oh, yeah.
And those scenes are so good. They're very, very good. They're surprisingly good. Like, the guy who plays the hermit is outstanding. And there's actually, like, actual touching moments there between the two of them. It's just really nice. But,
Hey, girl.
No, come on.
Is your daddy a mad scientist?
Come on.
Because it looks like you're just cadaver parts sewn together and then electrified.
But your brain's made from scratch. No, but I recommend people go back and watch it because it's a very well made film and it's
a
very
vole in a wheel.
Have you seen Wolfman? Have you seen the original Wolfman?
No, I don't think I've seen any of those.
I like it a lot, and I like The Mummy too quite a bit. The Mummy's not quite as good as Wolfman.
Somebody stole your shit today on Twitter.
Hmm?
Somebody, it wasn't somebody I know. I think somebody that I follow liked them or whatever, but said the song Desperado, but Nosferatu.
Oh.
And I was like, that's William's fucking thing.
That's
you
my
fucking
thing.
You wrote that song already.
Yeah, I did.
They're biting your style.
Oh, well.
Speaking of which, apparently there's a new Homestar Runner Halloween thing out as of yesterday. So.
I've also been reading.
Yesterday, the day before.
Reading a lot of Poe. A lot of stuff from Edgar Allan Poe that I've never
read
before. Is this
get up to watching The Following?
No.
Good. Do not watch The Following.
Well, I have watched The Following, I believe.
Why would you watch The Following?
Because everyone said it was this great horror movie or whatever, and I didn't even think
No, it's a TV show.
Oh, there! I thought there was a horror movie called that.
There might be. I'm talking about a TV show.
Oh.
Why, involving a Poe-obsessed serial killer and a cult of serial killers that go with him and all are fighting Kevin Bacon.
Oh. It's no, it's just,
not
like,
good.
I had never read The Fall of the House of Usher. I never read it. There's just a lot of things I'd never read, and my wife has a collection. So I thought, you know what, I read a collection of Stevenson stuff, I read a collection of Stoker stuff, I'll just read this. And I'm going to read a few other things. Probably I'll be able to read them even before Monday, before I read your thing. And I'm going to read Frankenstein again when I get around to it. I've never read a single Sherlock Holmes story. So
oh,
I might go to the library and find a collection and read.
I was
going
to say, I don't know where it is. It was in bad shape when I was a kid, had a collection of them.
And I might read Nathaniel Hawthorne, too, because I've noticed what something I didn't quite realize before was that there's an interesting, distinct difference between 19th century Gothic American literature and European, even though lots of what Poe writes is set in Europe anyway. But I'm kind of interested in stuff.
Is it the American Gothic fiction smells like milk and the European stuff is hairier?
No, well, like Poe, for example, he seems to, like, his voice is very skeptical. Like, the Gothic themes are psychological mostly, not, say, supernatural. Or if they are supernatural, it's more
metaphoric.
Of a... Yeah, is it really supernatural, or is it the person's head? You know, that kind of thing. You know, whereas you get some, you get other kind of stuff, like, well, with Stoker, for example, a lot of supernatural stuff. So, and also, my understanding is for some people, not Poe, because like I said, a lot of Poe's stuff is set in other countries anyway. When you're writing, when the American authors are writing in the Gothic style, well, there's not like these castles all over the place, right? You know, you're setting it in America, but there's no like a Gothic castle or building or whatever
to
set it in. So then what do you do? So
the woods, mostly the woods.
Well, you think of like Sleepy Hollow, for example, which is kind of an example of it, even though Sleepy Hollow's more comedic than anything else.
The woods.
Yeah, mystical.
And maybe a covered bridge if you got one.
Yeah. So I've never read Nathaniel Hawthorne at all, but I've heard that his stuff is quite good, so I might try reading him.
I think we've discussed this before, but you never saw the movie Gothic, right?
I don't think so.
You might want to, although that being said, it's been decades since I've seen it. It's from the 80s, and actually it's got some great people in it. Julian Sands, Gabriel Byrne, as usual, I'm an asshole here and I can't remember the actresses, but they're of note, at least one of them also. And it's... supposedly, this is an apocryphal story that Mary Shelley, Percy Shelley, Lord Byron, and the weird fucking doctor who wrote Das Vampir or whatever hung out at, I think, Byron's estate one weekend.
It was in Geneva, I believe.
Okay. And took a lot of drugs and shit and was weird, and they came out of it and they didn't talk about what happened.
Well, they
like,
were supposedly reading German ghost stories.
Yeah. But afterwards, then... several of, like, Mary Shelley wrote her thing, and that, like, a lot of stuff happened after that.
Supposedly in response to a challenge, to, you know,
Someone
was supposed to write something really scary or whatever.
is a fictitious, I'd say it's a horror movie, but, like, a spooky take on what happened to that night.
I think I have seen that. I think I have seen that.
And it absolutely rides the line of... this might be fucked up supernatural stuff, or they might just be high, like,
yeah.
Because they take a bunch of drugs, and that's part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
I keep thinking I should rewatch it, because it was very impactful for me at the time.
I'm thinking about trying to read some H.P. Lovecraft again, because I think I've tried it. It seems like I tried reading it before and it just didn't do anything for me. But now, you know, maybe with a different attitude.
It is very dry and very intriguing. The good news is, if you can handle reading it on a screen, go to hplovecraft.com and every piece of extant writing he has is there.
I might try that.
There's also collections and stuff. Like with Conan Doyle's Sherlock stuff, most of it's not very long. I believe the longest Lovecraft piece still qualifies as essentially a short story. I want to say it was like 100 pages in a book I was reading. And I keep wanting to say the title of it, but I keep going back to the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, which is not a Lovecraft story at all. But it's the same thing. It's somebody's name. Like, the story's called, like, The Account of So-and-So. They're all fairly dry.
I think that's why I didn't continue reading it when I started before. It was kind of like my response to Tolkien was like, this isn't, I'm not getting anything out of this.
And they don't end, they frequently don't have concrete resolutions.
Well, a lot of 19th century Gothic fiction doesn't. Poe often ends very abruptly.
That being said, it's really intriguing. And it's very Lovecraftian. So, if you're interested in that oeuvre, like, there's a reason why it's called Lovecraftian. Like it really shows up here. And especially some great, like, At the Mountains of Madness really has a lot of that stuff. The one I'm talking about that's, like, The Account of So-and-So. A very common theme in a lot of his stuff is, this person was cool, and then they left for a while, and they came back, and they were fucked up. Or, like, this person moved into town, and supposedly they were here, but nobody can understand. Like, they never ate, or some shit like that. It's often those kind of things. Like, and this person was really fucked up, and eventually we found out it's because there was demons and shit.
It's interesting to me to read these collections, because you really get a sense of a sort of a pattern. Like, with Poe, he's really interested. I mean, I have to speak in Jungian terms. He's really interested in complexes and synchronicity. Like, coincidences that happen that are meaningful.
Yeah.
He's really interested in that. Like, for example, when a guy gets so obsessed with his craft of painting, and he's painting a portrait of his wife, and just as the portrait gets to the perfect aspect of life, you know, of seeming like it's really her on the canvas, she dies, you know, that kind of thing. This synchronicity between these two things and how eerie it can be. He's really he really focuses a lot on that, and also being buried alive. He'll put that in just in any story he can, even when it's not entirely necessary.
In high school, we read, and actually the teacher read it to us, and this is a teacher I loved, but I still get shivers remembering his voice as he read to us Cask of Amontillado. Like, that to me is the most fucking bleak, nihilistic story. The whole time I'm like, what?
The one where he leads him into the catacombs and builds and a wall. And
him up there while he's just hanging out there.
He's really drunk.
Because, as it's mentioned in the first paragraph, that a lot of slights happened, but then he insulted me. We don't ever find out what insult. So I fucking buried him alive.
Yep.
And, like, had a conversation with him while I was doing the masonry work. Like, that story is... Spoiler alert for Cask of Amontillado, motherfuckers. But that's all there is to a story. It's not even that short, but that's the whole story right there. You just heard it. Like, the dude insulted me, so I told him I had some cool wine, took him downstairs, locked him against the wall, and walled him the fuck up.
Now,
and you're right, in Black Cat is a very similar thing. Like, you're right, he has a thing about being buried alive.
Interestingly, my wife was playing Fallout 4 in the last several days, and one of the things that was in her inventory was a bottle of whatever that wine's
Amontillado.
Called. Amontillado. Yeah, I thought, is that trying to make reference to
it
that
It may
story,
not, because that was...
That is a thing.
That's not a niche.
That's a real wine,
but it might have been, I don't know.
It's kind of strange. I mean, for all I know, she found it behind a broken wall and a skeleton was there, like, oh, see, wink, wink,
exactly.
This is from...
Yeah.
But I don't remember when she picked it up.
And it's just so... Like, you know, in, like, the first paragraph he's going to do this, but it's just so fucking abrupt. Like, it's so easy, for some reason, like, it makes me kind of scared of handcuffs, too, because it's that thing, like he just walked in, and we're looking, and then click.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's done. Like, you're now dead. You don't know it. We're still just hanging out. You're still looking for the wine, but you're dead now.
And he's really drunk. The guy's really drunk,
yes, too, so. But he sobers up really fucking fast. And I still remember, because he's like, for the love of God. And he's like, yes, for the love of God. And puts down another brick. And I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, like, Poe needed serious fucking therapy. Like, and I need serious fucking therapy because of Poe. Lovecraft is way more about, like, the chaos just below the surface. Like, into your normal life, this is odd. And by the end, it will be hellish.
Well, what the theme in Stoker seems to be, again, speaking in Jungian terms, he seems to be very interested in exploring the collective consciousness and archetypes and things like that. Like he picks a vampire for Dracula very deliberately because he perceives that it's almost universal, vampires. Not quite. I mean, you know, when people say vampires are universal, they're making a lot of things fit into a mold that maybe isn't quite right. But to him,
I like my cats.
But to him, vampires are universal. So if he tells a vampire story, it's going to appeal to everybody and at a very deep level.
All the bloodsuckers.
Yeah, right. So that's what I find interesting about his work. Although one piece, The Lair of the White Worm. I think I said, I feel very confident that some relative of his, after he'd become incapacitated due to a stroke or whatever it was, found it. It was something he would never have...
It didn't feel like him, yeah.
Oh, it's like it had to be a first or second draft, and he would never have sent it out to the world, but some relative said, well, hey, you know, it'll make money, and put it out there. Plus, it was so racist. I mean, it's one of the worst racist things.
Like, well, and that's something you really have to watch out for in Lovecraft. Lovecraft is racist as fuck.
White supremacist racist.
Yeah, no, Lovecraft's all over. Lovecraft is... Blacks are absolutely non-humans. Like, well, that's
what Stoker's... I mean, yeah. It's weird because sometimes when you're reading something and a character says something racist, it's like, well, yeah, you don't know if the author...
There's a lot of discussions about that.
But this story is in... third-person omniscient, or whatever you call it, third-person perfect, whatever. And it's that voice like, that's saying racist things.
And so knew that black people suck. You're like,
More like just stating it, because one sexist thing that Stoker does is he doesn't just talk about a woman doing something that is a sexist thing, like, you know, fainting or whatever.
Yeah.
He says, and then she, as women do, you know, like, yeah, he makes a point to say, she did it because she's a woman, right?
Yeah.
So here he was, the narrator's voice, the third person voice, is just saying these things as a matter, like, this is just what everybody knows about black people. And it's, oh my gosh, it's terrible.
That's part of why I don't know. This first book is first person. I expect Becca James Lowenstein is going to be first person. I may always write first person because I feel more comfortable in that. Because it is by definition unreliable narrator, and that's what I'm going for. I'm like, what's their version of the story?
Mm-hmm.
Now the problem is, I have a tendency, I think, to explain the reasoning, the character's reasoning for something, as part of their narration,
mm-hmm.
and I think I got that a little from Jim Butcher. I think I may be overusing that to the degree that it becomes a lot more tell, not show kind of thing. So I need to sort of work on that. But yeah, I may avoid third person in general because of that very thing. Like, I feel like then I'm telling you what reality is.
True, but
I might accidentally mess with that.
Right, but one of the things I like about what I'm reading, because I already know that if I read some Lovecraft and let's say I like it for whatever reason, it's like, okay, yeah, now I, you know, but whatever reason I didn't like it before, I like it now. I already know that I can't go too much further down the road of you know, more modern horror or gothic literature, because people have already suggested such stuff to me and I know I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like with me in science fiction. I like that golden age with Asimov and Clarke and all those guys. I joined a book club once, and I just bought a whole bunch of science fiction books that I thought would be interesting. I didn't like any of them, because either they were rehashing stuff from that golden age, and I didn't care about that, or they were trying to do something novel that I wasn't interested in.
Novel.
So I'm pretty sure that I'm going to stay within this 19th, early 20th century area no matter what I do.
I've always thought that about you.
And one reason I like the 19th century stuff is because often they do talk about all the stuff that's going on in the person's head. I like that. Mm. I like knowing what they're thinking and, you know, what they're feeling.
Well, see, and I'm trying to do that in first person, which, like I said, I think it's not... as well, effective.
And some of it is and some of it isn't in first person, but that's what I like about it. They'll spend pages just talking about what the person's thinking and why they're thinking it and some experience they had when they were a kid that's making this happen. I just find that also interesting. But I realize that, you know, in modern times, that's not really... But you said Butcher does that a lot.
Butcher, well, I mean, yeah, I feel like Butcher, well, at least in Harry Dresden, there are interludes where he basically sort of stops and recalibrates and so forth, and he does a lot of explaining why he's feeling the way he is and stuff like that. And it's incredibly unreliable, because frequently he says stuff and you're like, no, dude, you are delusional.
right.
Especially in the beginning of the fucking series.
But you think there's a point where you do that too much and it gets... a little too expositional or whatever?
Yeah, I just feel like at a certain point, because I mean, for me, it's much more all the time, because it's me. I think my character in Odd Wings sounds too much like me at this point.
Mm.
And I'm worried. I mean, I guess it's okay if she does. I'm worried that'll just be a thing in my writing. I need that not to be that way. Mm. And I think that works because the main character in Becca James Lowenstein, is very different from me in a lot of ways. And so I think I can make a more conscious effort to have her act differently.
Well, when I read...
it's also going to be a much more comic-based kind of thing. There's jokes in this one, but I feel like this is more serious. Becca James Lowenstein is going to be much more... Terry Pratchett-y, silly kind of stuff, I think.
When I read my novel Thresholds recently, which it's always great, you know, like four or five years after you publish something and you've totally forgotten everything in it.
Yeah.
So you can actually read it.
Oh, it was that guy!
you can read it like a person, you know, who's bought it.
Yeah.
And one thing I liked about it was how much time was spent in the heads of some of the main characters. And that's, I mean, I was... Sometimes, with certain characters and certain parts, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I mean, in spite of myself, I was saying that because I thought, wow, did I write that? That's actually pretty good. So
then you may really like my book.
Well, I'm sure I will
mean,
like it.
It's only one character, but still.
I'm sure I will like it. There's no question about that. But
the other thing, I'm learning a lot. Like, I'm terrified that, like, Odd Wings is not going to be that good. Because it's sort of my first attempt and I'm learning a lot of lessons or whatever. But things are already... Becca James Lowenstein, don't think it's going to be an origin story.
Oh.
Odd Wings definitely is. Now, that being said, there's a lot of shit from the origin I need to explain, so I think I'm going to do some judicious use of flashbacks. And things,
sure.
I want to start much more in media res. As
flashbacks can be real. I mean, a lot of people kind of, you know, think it's, I don't know, lazy storytelling or something, but when you do it right, it's really effective.
In Odd Wings, I decided to finally say, guys, the working title I have for my book is Odd Wings. It is shitty. It's going away. I just can't think of a better one yet. I don't use flashback. I use dream sequences. Maybe too much. There's a lot of dream sequences. To be fair, they're sort of plot reasons, but yeah. A lot of dream sequences. And just the barest handful of cultural references that I'm like, is that too precious? There's just a couple places. We'll have to see.
Things that are going to date it?
Yeah, and things that are just a little niche.
Hmm.
And I mean, sometimes it doesn't matter, because there's a reference to wearing an article of clothing that has a particular TV show on it. And I'm like, it doesn't really matter if they don't know what that was, because it's not. It's flavor. But then there's a different time where something is compared to something from a movie that is not necessarily universal movie. And I'm like, I don't know. So we'll have to see. You guys will tell me. We should draw something out of the hat, or else like nothing's going to happen. By the way, if for those of you joining us for the first time, if you're thinking maybe you should have explained how the show works or whatever, this is it. What you've been hearing, that's how the show works. We're a little more up our own butts tonight, but this is pretty much how the show works.
Another thing I've been thinking about is, the truth is,
Bob's about to illustrate.
I, ever since I was a kid, I've been interested in ghost stories. I think I've said that before.
Yeah,
But specifically the ones that are told. You know, a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, if you like ghost stories, you know, here's, you know, Poe. They give me Edgar Allan Poe or something. And, well, like Telltale Heart, for example. That's a perfect example because I had an album that had ghost stories on it that I'd listened to a lot. And Telltale Heart was one of them. But, of course, it was changed to work better as being recited.
Yeah.
And I preferred that way over the actual written thing
definitely.
That Poe had. So one of the reasons I didn't read this kind of stuff when I was younger, even though it really appealed to my sensibilities, was because I just preferred things to be spoken. I don't know what's happened in the intervening years to make me better appreciate, you know, what's written, but that's why I'm reading it now, and I didn't read it when I was younger.
Yeah, no, I also tend to go for that. And there's, in fact, yeah, there's, I think I said recently, I've decided The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman is probably my favorite book, if I have to pick one. And there's some people I'm thinking of sending it to. And part of the thing is I want a little note being like, this is best done if it is read out loud to someone else. Because I really feel like there's something you get from that.
I can see that. I can see that with that book for sure.
Now, it's a little bit cheating because all the versions I've heard read aloud have good accents
for the different characters. Right.
I've read a couple of versions. And I did my best to do that when I read it to Trish. And it's not fair to assume everybody is going to pull that off, but I just feel he has such conversational dialogue.
Yeah.
I try and steal that from him a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I like, you know, sort of the mumblecore of fantasy novels. It's just, they're just very interesting bits of dialogue, and I feel like it's more fun when you hear them.
Yep, I have to agree with that. Well, Coffee wants to know. What is your most treasured memory?
Last week's episode of the podcast.
I think some people are not surprised to find this out about me, and some people are really surprised to find this out about me, but I am a very unsentimental person when it comes down to it. I know on the podcast I've often talked about things I remember that have impressed me greatly.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say, I mean, those are memories that have impressed my mind so much that they're just there, easily accessible. They're not there because I particularly treasure them. And I sometimes frustrate my wife, and I frustrated my previous wife this way, actually, and some of my family members with having very little interest in, like, pictures.
Trips down memory lane.
Yeah, having pictures taken or doing things to solidify something that happened. Because here's the thing about, I do appreciate, As a genealogist, I appreciate some of this stuff, obviously. But in terms of of documenting my own life, when someone shows me a picture, oh, do you remember this? No. This snapshot of what happened gives me absolutely no insight into this event at all. And if I do remember when this picture was taken, I remember it quite in spite of the picture. You didn't need to show me the picture for me to remember it. It's something about that event made an impression, and so I remember it. If it didn't make an impression and I didn't remember it, showing me a picture is not going to help, especially if it's just a capturing it. Well, and of course, many pictures are people posing or something. It's like, this doesn't tell me anything about when or what was going on or what was
posed pictures auspicious. Of me just help me remember how much I was annoyed at having to pose for that picture. I am not making that up. I don't have the issue of not remembering and not being able to trigger the memories and all that sort of thing as much. I am starting to realize, I'm starting to come to terms with, because I don't really like this. I think, like you, I'm not very sentimental. I've discovered, like, in relationships, I am very out of sight, out of mind. Just in general, I'm into whatever's happening now, and less so into what was. I mean, I like telling stories about the old days, but, like, I'm not pining for them, generally speaking.
Right.
And I'm at the point where I'm like, as long as I got Trish, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't want my life to change. Like, I'm a very homebodied, sedentary person. But, like, I'd deal, and I'd find new shit that I was into.
Well,
as long as I got hurt.
And that's another thing. There's not a period in my life that I wish I could go back to.
I think there would be some that would be fun to visit for a long weekend. Mostly my college years. But in general, I agree with you.
No, every part of my life, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. I'm not saying that it wasn't pleasurable, but part of the point of it at the time was not just what was happening, but where it seemed to be going. And, of course, once I get to that place, then I can enjoy that place.
Well, and the limiting nature of a given moment part of what makes it.
So, I mean, I have great memories. I have things that have impressed me that I like to think about. I mean, probably, probably the memories that I enjoy bringing to my own mind frequently are this time of year back on the farm. I mean, that I've often talked about that, just lying out in the dry grass, just smelling what autumn smelled like on the farm with the corn and the dry grass and the cold breeze, but the warm sun. I mean, all that stuff. But, you know, there's nothing that I wish could have stayed the way it was. This was also true in raising kids. I know a lot of people would say, oh, don't you miss when they were such and such, or don't they grow up so fast? And it's like, I am always looking forward. I appreciate what's going on right now with them and their development, but part of that appreciation is I know where it's going, and I'm looking forward to that, and I'll enjoy that. Right now, my relationship with the kids isn't so great, but I don't wish that I could go back to when it was. I wish that now it was it was what it should be now.
My mom used to rant about people who had their good old days. She'd like go out to dinner with some people and somebody would talk about how their high school years were like the best years of their life. And she's like, I don't get that. I loved my high school years. I also loved my college years. I also loved the years after that. Like,
well, I remember when I was in high school, people would say, well, better appreciate it. These are going to be the best years of your life. That is so depressing.
Are you telling
me that after I turn 18, I'm done? That's terrible.
Trying for decades to come to terms with it all and still having good memories. In general, I just try not to remember high school because it's just full of dumb shit.
Well, I just knew.
College, I love remembering.
I just knew that everybody who said that was just wrong.
Yeah.
Or they better be wrong, or else the rest of my life is going to be miserable. That's stupid.
Kill myself.
Well,
now.
You know, you knew that. Well, you didn't know, but you suspected you'd maybe get married one day and you'd have kids. That was going to be pretty cool. You know, how can you say that these are going to be the best years of your life? I mean, there is a time in my past that I can say, well, that time in my past was probably, by comparison to times previous and times after, the best time of my life.
Me too. It was from age 1 to 3.
No, well, for me, there was a time.
From once I started able to walk until I was old enough to.
For me, it was make sentences. When we were working together at Applied, that was a really great time for me in a lot of ways. And I could say in many ways better than things are now, but not in a way where I want to go back to it or I wish I could go backwards. It seems like every time in my life, I've more or less liked where I am. Not that I don't want to do anything to make it better or turn it in a different direction, but I don't long for something that was before. I've never done that. And I'm honestly not quite sure I understand the impulse of other people to do that. Like, when I hear parents long for a time when their kids were younger, I don't understand that. It's like, well, wasn't the whole point of you raising the kids for them to become adults? And now they are adults and you can interact with them on equal footing. Isn't that better than being a parent? I mean, being a parent was great, but now you're friends with these people, and that's good too,
see,
right?
You don't understand. I feel like this is one of those things where you're like, you understand, but you just don't agree.
No, I really don't understand it.
Well, it's pretty simple. Sometimes things suck, and you remember a time when they didn't suck or when they were better, and you think, man, it would be nice if things didn't suck now. And it doesn't necessarily mean if you had a magic wand, you would actually go back there. But you're like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if tonight, instead of my kid yelling at me and then slamming the door and me sitting here crying because I can't understand what they're going through, it was back to when they were five and I just read them that book when they were sitting on my lap and they said, I love you, and hugged me around the neck. Wouldn't that be a nice Friday instead of this Friday? That's all it is.
Okay, but...
wouldn't it be cooler back when I was in that relationship and we were getting along so well and I got great sex and we were having a good time as opposed to now where I'm lonely and sad and my back's damaged and I'm stuck by myself in this little apartment and can barely pay my medical bills?
But there's a lot of... irrational and illogical things about that comparison.
No question.
Okay, okay.
Are you saying because of that you can't understand how someone would think that?
No, I mean...
See, that's the part when you're like, I would not feel that way, or that's not logical or rational. I absolutely agree. It's when you say, I don't understand why somebody would think that, that I'm like...
To me, it's so overwhelmingly illogical and rational. It's like, even if you're tempted to think that, it'd be like, yeah, but that's ridiculous, and then you just wouldn't even say that.
All right, I mean...
That's what I'm saying is that... Overwhelmingly irrational and illogical.
There have been times when I have seen you in a position that I would say was the point that I was a little worried you were going to harm yourself.
Mm.
And I'm sorry. I don't believe that in that moment, if somebody was like, wouldn't it be great if it was 10 years ago and things were great, that you wouldn't at least be like, yeah, it might, at least for a minute.
No.
I'm not saying you would actively do it. But I'm saying, as opposed to the semi-suicidal state you're in now, yeah, okay, in that case, I think you're irrational.
But see, I wouldn't think in those terms. I would think, if, to me, there's not a choice between feeling this horrible, almost suicidal way now and this thing in the past, there are lots of other options, like... the situation I'm in could not be the situation I'm in today. I mean, to think about the past is not at all helpful. In fact, it would probably make me feel worse. I mean, that's part of what I mean by irrational.
That's why it's a fantasy. Nobody's like, huh, can I actually recreate that now? Fantasy. They're saying, wouldn't it be nice if I was happy instead of sad? I mean, it's not, I don't...
But I absolutely understand why that's
not necessarily a healthy behavior, why that's not necessarily a rational behavior, but why it's surprising to you or you don't get how someone...
Are other options that would probably help them feel better, like immediately feel better.
Except all of those options are just theoretical and might not work, as opposed to that thing 10 years ago where you absolutely felt better than you feel now.
Except you won't feel better because that was 10 years ago and this is now. I mean, that seems to be so depressing.
Wait, what does that mean? Why? You will feel better because you'll be 10 years ago. All the shit that happened the previous 10 years is gone and you'll be at that place that you know you'll be happy because you literally were, and you will be the person you were when you were there and that person was happy.
But you're going back to talking about a fantasy again, though.
That's what it is. Nobody is seriously like, I really wish I had the magical ability to teleport back 10 years right now. Nobody's ever saying that. Everybody's saying, like, everybody's being wistful for
isn't it more useful to...
Absolutely it's more useful. That's not the question here.
Well, what is the question?
How is it you can't understand somebody would think that way?
Because it's not useful.
People think not useful shit all the time. 80% of the shit I think is not useful. This is that emotion thing again. We are driven by our emotions. I am sad. I want to feel happy. So I wistfully think about a time when I was happy. Of course that's not useful. Of course I should go out and do shit. Though? But that's not what I do because my emotions make me irrational. How do you not understand this as a human being? Even if you don't experience it very often, how do you not get that sometimes when I'm mad, I have thoughts that are not helpful, but that at the moment they give me the dopamine reaction and I feel a little better about myself?
I don't know. I don't know how to answer your question.
I'm sorry. This is the one sticking point in our relationship in all the time I've known you, is what to me is a a basic self-evident aspect of society is something that you continually claim to just not understand. Not saying not that you would not do. That's fine if you wouldn't do it. But that you literally don't understand how a person does it. Like, it's to the degree... Like, you're the only person that I could have this conversation with for this many years and not call you a liar. You're literally the only person in the world. Even if Trish persisted in this, okay, I'd be like, you're making shit up.
You said it a second ago. You said people are driven by their emotions.
Absolutely. Lots.
I don't think that's necessarily true.
You are wrong. Like, I don't even know... I don't even know how to start arguing that. You are 100% wrong
about
that. I
mean, children are.
So are adults. Constantly in almost everything.
No, adults can be. I mean, certainly a person can be overwhelmed by anger or fear.
The vast majority of their actions and practices and thoughts are somewhat irrational because of their emotions. I will bet my life on that. Most people do not inherently go around doing the logical, rational thing.
So you think it's...
I don't think you go around doing the logical, rational thing every day.
Well, no, I'm sure I don't. But I...
Well, then why are you so confused that other people don't?
No, this is... It's a matter of degree. I mean, to me, human experience is not... I don't observe that human nature or that human beings are driven by their emotions. Emotions are part of the equation, certainly.
Huge part. Most of it.
Well, I mean, for some people, I imagine that's true, but I don't think that's true for everyone.
I think that's true for the vast majority of people. I think that's true for every person I have ever met, except maybe you. And honestly, sometimes I wonder if it's not true for you and you're just kind of in denial about it. I don't know. Because I find it so shocking. Like, I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Almost everybody does. That's how drug addiction works. That's how bad relationships work. That's how abusive relationships work. That's how clumsy flirting works. That's how accidentally doing racist shit works. Like, it's all people are like, I feel concerned. I feel overly... I feel sad, and I want to do something to immediately fix that. I feel angry, and I want to vent that in some fashion. It's not necessarily healthy. If we all did the rational, healthy thing, even the majority of the time, we would all be in so much better shape than we are. Society as a whole would be brilliant if even just 51% of the time, most people did the rational and logical thing. Like, I know I'm getting mad. Like, this just becomes, like, years and years of stuff. But also, I'm like, the world would not be the shithole it was if what you're saying was remotely true.
Well, that's... No. Actually, the world could definitely be exactly what you're talking about, because culture plays a part here. I mean, certainly, we have a culture, especially in the United States... that discourages people from being rational or logical. It certainly encourages people to be driven by their emotions. And in a culture like that, yeah, you're going to observe a lot of people behaving badly.
Okay, I would...
But that's not an issue of human nature. That's an issue of a certain cultural...
Well, I'm not saying... I'm talking about practical effects. I don't know if it's culture or an evil god or what. I maintain that most people in the world... do this. And if you're saying it's culture's fault and it's not, I'm not saying it's human nature. I'm saying it is literally what happens. I'm not saying it's supposed to or that we couldn't have it happening. I'm saying it is what happens, and I defy you to find any culture of any significant scale in the world today where it is not part of it. Like, I don't think you go to Sweden and suddenly they're really, like, logical, or you go further east and suddenly they're, like, much more rational in their decisions. There might be a marked difference, but still, no, people are driven frequently by their emotions to do irrational, illogical things in the majority of their behaviors. I stand by that. Whether or not that should be the case, whether or not that is something that could be changed, what causes that, all of that I am open to interpretation. But the idea that that doesn't happen or that you couldn't understand how someone would do that, I find completely alien.
I, of course, I do understand, like, in particular contexts where I can see a causal, like, someone has just died. Yes. Someone's going to be overcome with grief. Someone's going to say a lot of things that they don't mean or do a lot of things that they wouldn't normally do. because they're overcome with emotion. Of course, human beings have that, you know, that potentiality to become controlled by emotions. But the notion that this is this state of being where their emotions are ruling them most of the time, where it's the exception, where it's not the rule. I can only speak for where I come from. It seemed like most people I knew were pretty level-headed people. Were there emotional outbursts? Of course. Again, I don't deny that people don't have emotions or that sometimes they don't rule them. But the people I knew weren't ruled by them as a rule. In fact, a lot of times it was kind of hard to know what someone was feeling because, if anything, the culture I came from might have been a little over-repressive.
And you've talked about this kind of stuff before.
Maybe some of those outbursts were because of that.
And
I
believe that is some of it. That being said, every single story I can think of that involves specific people in your family, whether it's a story of when you were a kid or a story in current years, I absolutely think involves people in that story, family members of yours, doing things that are illogical and irrational for what I'm pretty sure are emotional reasons. I do not want to get into specifics because then I'm going
no,
after
no,
your
no,
family.
No, but that's true.
But literally any story I can think of involving anything you've told me about your parents, your siblings, any of that.
And if I've told you about those things, it's probably because I didn't understand them. Like someone was acting in a way that was completely what I thought was completely out of their character.
Yeah, but sometimes they're just stories you tell about just an event that happened.
Well, sometimes. Because sometimes I can put it together.
100% of those stories, I feel, have those components.
That's probably true, or else I wouldn't talk about them. Because that's why I talk about these things, which is what's frustrating you so much, is I talk about these things constantly. I don't always see the cause. I don't always understand. And the thing I was just talking about with kids and, you know, wishing for them to be younger or whatever, I just do not get that. I can get a lot of things, but that one I don't understand because it seems I don't
because I felt better
get the connected
then.
Tissue.
I felt better then. I feel bad now.
I don't see how that's an explanation for it, though. I honestly don't.
Okay, let me put it this way. I wish I felt better than I feel now.
That's fine.
I don't know how to feel better now. I'm kind of depressed. Every option I can think of, I'm like, no, that sounds shitty. You know what would be really awesome? If I just magically felt better. Like when I did back then when I happened to be feeling better because life was better. That would feel good. I'm not going to try and build time travel or go hook up with an ex, but I stand by my statement that it would feel nice to feel nice.
But all of what you're saying is quite different to me than saying, I wish this was true. To me, that's different to say that than everything you just said, which is so nuanced and so, you know, well, let's hedge what we're saying here.
You just take everybody literally when they say, I wish I was back in college. You think, if somebody said you got a genie.
Now you've brought up a problem that I frequently have that I would think know about with this whole taking people literally thing. Yes, I often do take what people say literally.
Okay. This will help a lot then. In that case, the answer to this one with the nostalgia thing is virtually never are they saying literal. And if they are saying literal, it's because they really feel bleak and hopeless and just have no other answer they can think of. Which, obviously, there are some, but they're in such a dark place that they can't envision a way out of it. But even then, they're probably speaking metaphorically or just, you know, wistfully.
Yes, I often get in trouble for taking people for what they're saying. I mean, I don't know why I do that. But I do that all the time.
Well, I mean, that's an easy one to have been raised on. I had to explain to a friend the other day because I said something to him and he was getting kind of annoyed with me and I finally had to say, I'm not being sarcastic. And he was like, oh. And then later, he was still kind of punchy. And I was like, what's your thing? And he's like, well, you said you weren't being sarcastic, but I still feel. And I was like, no. Let me explain this to you. There are two things that I have learned I have to do. And these are my signals. If I tell you I'm not being sarcastic, I'm not being sarcastic. And the other one, because an ex-girlfriend was obsessed with this one, and so it just became my thing, because she made it my thing. If I say I'm serious, I'm not lying. Like, if I totally, you know, I spin bullshit. If I say I'm serious, it's not bullshit.
Right.
And that's an arbitrary one. It's one that I came up with, again, because this girlfriend, like, was obsessed with that. If you say you're serious, it means it's real. So, I'm like, okay. And I need to have one, obviously. I need to have a trigger where I can be like, dude, I'm not fucking around with you because I lie so much. And that's mine. So, I get in trouble for that a lot, too. But... yeah.
You know, I do. I when people say things, I often believe them. Just what they're saying. I don't...
How do you hang out with me and still do that? Have I not taught you? You just think I'm really unique, don't I? Don't you?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that.
I mean, I lie constantly.
I know that.
See?
Well, yes, but I know...
That's what I'm saying. So you think I'm unusual.
Yeah, I don't expect everyone else...
You think most people are way more honest?
Well, okay. You know, again... how I was raised. Say what you mean what you say.
Yeah, but that one I can buy.
So
I can absolutely buy that.
So I want people to take me at my word, even if they don't understand it, because if they say, well, you said this and this is how I understood it, then I have a frame.
Yeah.
And I can say, oh, I understand why you understood it that way, and so then I can correct
it. And I would say but from experience, people don't do that with you.
But if I speak in a way that's like, I hate it when there's a misunderstanding and I know it's because I got lazy in how I was talking. Because, you know, when you and I talk, I can take shortcuts. And I sometimes wish I didn't do that, because...
No, but it makes everything not so long.
Right, but a lot of times when I do it, it's like on the air, and so people don't understand I'm taking a shortcut. So they're going to take me at what I said, and they're going to completely...
Well, and I try and help when I can. If it's something where I legitimately know he means this, but he's saying it quickly, I'll try and step in.
But so I've just, you know... Say what you mean what you say. So that's how I want to be taken. Because, again, even if I say it wrong, it'll give me a place to start so I can correct
it. And it would be weirdly unbalanced and kind of hypocritical to not then expect the same from everyone else.
That's right. Yeah. So when someone says something to me, I take them at their word so that if I'm wrong, either I'm going to be right, or if I'm wrong, we've got a frame of reference because, oh, well, yes, I did say this, but I meant that.
Semantically, that gets ugly.
Well, I suppose it can, but there are some people that just...
I feel that, dare I say, living in the society you live in, it might not be logical or rational to do that.
It's not helpful, probably.
Yes. No, but I'm saying there might be mounting enough evidence that it's no longer a rational decision either, but more of a desperate hope that suddenly people will get honest.
But the problem with framing it that way is that after a while, it's not really a decision. It's just what I do.
Yes.
It's a habit.
Yes. Although I feel like there's a lot of things that you attribute to that that not necessarily, I mean, you can change shit.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It takes a lot of effort and time.
Yes, that's true. I agree with that completely.
And it's potentially something that you should look at. Unfortunately, we can only have these breakthroughs if I'm screaming at you.
Well, no, I mean, you know, my wife often...
Does she yell at you too?
No. In the almost 20 years we've been together, she doesn't get upset with me, but she does feel sorry for me.
Because it's more of an exasperation.
She's
what kind of boy in the plastic bubble are you?
She'll say, well, you have to understand that when these people said this is what they meant.
Yeah.
And I don't because
and often just outright lying. Forget the
yeah.
I was being figurative or whatever. Sometimes just straight up lying.
And sometimes it's just hard for me. There's two problems. It's hard for me to believe that, even though she probably knows better than me. But then it's also hard for me to... One of the things that's hard for me to change is it feels like I'm being rude to that person to assume they're lying all the time.
Yeah. Well, and I certainly don't think you should start walking around doing the opposite of what you're doing now. But in reality, is you have to be somewhere in the middle, which is way more complicated.
Yes, yes.
It's way harder to do.
But it feels well. Here's another big obstacle, and this is something that I had a real hard time with even while we worked at Applied, and I've struggled with it to this day. Obviously, is, you know, it's like someone saying, William, there are some adults that you have to understand are actually only 12,
yep,
or
yeah.
14,
yep,
or 6.
Yep.
You have to realize that, and then you have to treat them like that. And that's so hard for me, because I don't want someone to treat me like that.
You don't have to, but here's the thing. You don't want someone to treat you like that. You're not 12.
I know, but even if I was acting 12...
And if you said to this person, you're a 12-year-old... Well, first of all, they'd be like, fuck you.
No, right.
But also, but if somehow you convince them, if you're like, look at my chart, you're clearly emotionally 12, and then they're like, oh my God, I am.
Right, but
they wouldn't want you to treat them as a 12-year-old. But the truth is, they will be happier, and you will be happier if you do.
But I wouldn't want them to... If I was acting like a 12-year-old, I would want someone to say, you're acting like a 12-year-old, or treat me like an adult, so I'd go, oh, crap, I'm acting like a 12-year-old, stop. That's what I would want someone to do for me. So
that takes a lot of effort.
Well, but that's, I don't know.
I mean, you would, if you were doing that, you would be constantly having talks with people.
Well, yeah, but
acting like a 12-year-old. And that's why so much of this only works with people who get to know you.
Well, but
so many of these conversations you can only have
in my present life. What have I done instead? I mostly avoid people.
Well, and this is the thing. People have to really get to know. Communicating with you is difficult. Because of some things that are perfectly fine and rational and good, and in fact, even enviable to some people, but it is out of line with how most people communicate, and therefore, it becomes a complication.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, this is a dumb way to phrase it, but we're at 25 minutes over, so... It may be possible that your way is essentially better, and that if everybody was communicating the way you were, things would be awesome. And I'm not going to say that's true or not true, but the fact that it's just not how others communicate means misunderstanding you have it. And part of the thing is to get to know you and to learn how you communicate. And that's why you and I can interact. If we met on the street... We probably couldn't even have a fucking conversation.
But it's literally painful to me to realize that I have to interact with someone in what I consider a condescending way. I just, it hurts me to do it.
Yeah.
So I don't do it.
Yeah. No, I get that.
So then either we get along anyway, or they get mad at me.
Yeah.
Or I decide I just can't even have any interaction with this person. Because as painful as that is, it's less painful than treating them less than the respect that I think they deserve. Because, see, to me it's disrespectful. The way they seem to be demanding I treat them is in a disrespectful way.
See, and I would say, to me, that's falling for the old trap of treating everyone fairly is not the same as treating everyone the same. Because we all like to say, that dude's emotionally 12. But what it really is that dude's living his life the way he has ended up choosing to live his life. And so one could argue that it is disrespectful to not meet him on the terms that he has established that he wants to live.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point.
That being said, generally when people are like, you have to treat them like they're 12, I tend not to like that either. The exception is if it's basically a necessary relationship.
Like at work.
Exactly, exactly. I'm like, you know what? This is how we get along at work. If somebody's emotionally 12 in my social circle, they stop being my friend. I don't hang out with them anymore. Because I don't go for that either.
I mean, it was easier with customers or with coworkers. It was a lot easier. But
yeah.
Just people that you, like you said, knowing in social circles, it's like, oh, I just can't do
And
that.
It's tricky, especially because if it's like a group and it's like, they're going to show up. So I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. But yeah, no, and I get that.
But one reason it's hard for me
Nobody would choose to do that.
One reason it's hard for me to accept that this person who is 12 is this is how they've chosen to live their life is because in every single instance when I encounter someone like this, that person
if you're
is.
A listener named Chad, I wasn't talking
that
about.
That person
you.
Is miserable. They're miserable.
Absolutely.
I cannot. it's hard for me to accept that, oh, this is just the way they want to live. I mean, come on.
And
they're
it's
miserable.
Very possible that you could help with that, but it's frequently a, you are only going to, it's the miracle worker, the movie. I don't know about the reality. It sounds like Andy Sullivan may have made up a lot of shit. But anyway, the movie, like, unless you're willing to have the goddamn fight in the kitchen and do the fucking water and that it has a name and all, unless you're willing to go whole hog, all you're doing is creating chaos.
That's right.
In between.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And it's bad. Pain, see, this is the problem. Yeah. You feel for people and you're like, oh my God, I want to help you. But
I don't want that kind of relationship. I'm not their parent.
Obviously you don't want to be the miracle worker.
No,
there.
I don't want to parent someone.
You have to do the relationship that's going to be the most okay for both of you.
Or have no relationship at all.
Sometimes that is the best relationship. We are so over time. Our hour is up. By the way, your insurance didn't go through on that. So
as infuriated as you get with me, I get with myself. You understand that.
Oh, yeah. Nobody gets annoyed with you more than you.
I'm sure that's true.
But it's a weird line, because people who don't know you very well get frustrated, and they're like, yeah, you're just a fucking weirdo, whatever. Like, fucking weirdos are out there everywhere. But then those of us that get to know you, he's like, no, he's a fucking awesome, amazing, eloquent, brilliant man. He's just got these couple of things that drive both him and everyone else insane. Crazy. And it becomes, like, such extra poignant pain. And again, like, this is not a new conversation we just had. We have literally had this conversation at least a dozen times in our friendship.
No, but what I know about you is that...
I get loud when I'm enthusiastic, whether or not I'm angry?
No, it's... You know how much pain I go through just in getting through life.
Yes.
In dealing with people. And it hurts you that I hurt.
Well...
And so you get frustrated.
It is not unlike... when you see the 12-year-old. You are not emotionally or mentally a 12-year-old, but you're missing these components for functioning in society that most people have, and so there's this, I want to help you, but I'm like, I don't know, I don't think I can miracle worker you. Like, and I'm certainly not going to not hang out with you. So then, like, I'm like, you know what, he's him and I'm me, and just every once in a while it's like, oh my God! You've been around people, right? Like, how do you... It's not... You haven't been in a bunker, but it's not seeping in. And I really do understand why. And I want... But I'm like, how is this not... I'm just like, it's been so many years. How has somebody else not come in and been like, W-A-T? Like, I don't know. I'm like, you're such a smart guy. I'm like... thing, but I do get it. I absolutely get it. And moments like this, I'm thankful I'm not you.
I'm sure there's lots of those.
No, but there's a lot of moments where I'm the opposite. Because I admire you for so many things, and a lot of them have to do with how you see the world. And I think it saves you from a lot of hurt that I experience. Now, likewise, you have a lot of hurt that I don't because of the way you view things. But there's a lot of shit that has really hurt me in my life that I'm like, I don't think it would have done that to you, or you wouldn't have gotten in that situation. Things like that. So,
well, but I'm very, you know, I don't know. I have to follow the news for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
Moral, to me. But
I've started doing that too.
It is so painful.
It is bad.
It is so very painful. I can't even explain and describe.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. I'm with you on that one. Unlike you, though, I understand why it happens, because I think people are the worst.
See, but I don't think that.
I know, and that's your problem. You need to hate more. You need more hate in your life. Let the hate flow through.
Mom said we don't hate.
Strike me down, and then your training will be complete.
Mom said we don't hate. So I don't do it. Mom said so.
All right, let's come up with... How about loathe? Can we loathe?
No.
Despise. We're in an hour and a fucking half. We should wrap this up. Yeah, so remember earlier when I said we kind of had our heads up our own butts this episode? Well, apparently that was a harbinger, because
the good news is, by next week, I should have read your book, and
I'm very excited
about that. And given you feedback, at least in email, even if we haven't met.
Trish is gone all next week, so who knows what state I'll be in. That's always a guess. So yeah, long episode. You're welcome, I guess. If you'd like to learn more about us, I guess, listen again next week. Duh.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.